Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
I am but a Jew praying in art. If I have succeeded in any measure, if I have gained the power of being recognized among the elite of the world, I owe it all to the teachings and eternal virtues of my people.
Today we bring you Portrait of the Artist as a Fighting Man by Helen Candel Hyman, a story of the life of Arthur Schick, who died in September of 1951. There is a house in New Canaan, Connecticut, a white house set far back in a garden off the main road. On a little sign by the driveway, you will see the letters S-Z-Y-K, Schick. On the second floor of this house, which was the home of Arthur Schick, you will come to a large, bright studio. A huge desk dominates this room, a desk covered with hundreds of bottles of ink and paint in many colors, with pencils and brushes of all sizes. But do not be misled. This is not the peaceful studio of an artist, the quiet workroom of a lover of color, design, beauty. It is the workroom of a fighting man. The brushes and the paints are weapons ready for use. All that is missing there in the studio in New Canaan now is the soldier himself. The weapons which Arthur Schick used were not new ones. They had been with him since boyhood. His talent as an artist was known when he was a child in the town of Lodz in Poland. His family recognized his skill before he was four. His teachers not long after that.
Arthur Schick.
Yes, sir?
Please come to my desk and bring your mathematics notebook.
Yes, sir.
Your books, please.
Here, sir.
Now tell me, Schick, what do I see in the margins of your notebook? Algebraic equations, perhaps?
No, sir. They're just pictures.
Schick, you have been drawing in my class again, haven't you?
Well,
now,
sir.
Now, this is the last warning I'm going to give you. I'm taking your notebook away for the last time. If I catch you scribbling again after this, you'll be severely punished. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now go back to your seat and study. But, Arthur, if you need some paper to draw on after school, you'll find some in my bottom drawer.
So, with one hand, the teachers took away the boy's work, and with the other, they encouraged him to go on. But the greatest encouragement came from his father, a blind man who never saw his son's work. Saw it only through the eyes of friends who came to the house.
Look for me again today, will you, Max? These are the pictures Arthur did this week. Do you see any improvement, any change?
Every time I come, Alexander, I see more maturity in his work.
Oh?
The boy knows how to use color and use it boldly.
Huh?
If you could only see the talent he has for detail, nothing seems to escape him. But there is one thing that does puzzle me.
What's that?
The subjects he chooses. Now, I've been looking at his work for a long time, and I've discovered only two themes that interest him. The history of the Jewish people, or well-known heroes, and not military ones.
I know, the liberators. Max, Arthur seems obsessed by the great leaders of history who fought for freedom. He reads all the time, and whenever he finds a man who fought against oppression, he paints him.
That's strange in a boy of his age, isn't it? My own boys are fascinated by great battles and the men who fought them. Most boys are, I think. But they haven't begun to think of freedom or justice or liberty yet. Why do you think Arthur finds these themes so fascinating?
I don't know, Max. I wonder, too. I'm not even sure Arthur himself knows. Once he told me it was because he's a Jew and knows what oppression means.
But what can he know yet, Alexander, at his age? What experience can he have had?
It seems sometimes as if this understanding was born in him.
Perhaps it was. And when I look at his work and see the devotion he puts into each piece, I often ask myself, which comes first with this boy? His love of art or love of his subject?
Max, with Arthur, I think the two loves are inseparable.
The two loves were inseparable. They were not a phase of childhood to be outgrown, not passing fancies. They were to develop together, bear fruit together, and last a lifetime. At the Académie Julin in Paris, where his father sent him to study, his technique, his sense of color, of design, grew. But at the same time, his knowledge of history, of Judaism, of the Bible was growing too. His friends wondered at the artist who was a scholar and the scholar who was an artist. And as they watched his work, they could see a style developing, a style which puzzled them.
I don't know.
What are you shaking your head over, Leo?
These paintings of yours, Arthur, I used to think I knew your work before I went to Italy to study, but now it's changed. Something seems to have influenced you. When I look at your work, I seem to...
Yes?
I know. When I look at your work, first I think I'm looking at an illuminated manuscript, something out of the Middle Ages, or perhaps a Persian miniature,
Good. That's just what you are seeing, Leo.
But, Arthur...
Leo, I've been searching for years, trying to develop a style, a technique of my own. And while you've been away, I've been studying the medieval manuscripts. I've spent hours poring over Persian miniatures, and I think I've found what I've been looking for. A technique to help me say what I want to say.
What do you want to say, Arthur?
I want to tell the story of the Jewish people, my people. I want to show their glories as well as their tragedies. The Bible has been my inspiration since I was a child. I want to pass on my inspiration.
But why limit yourself to one technique, to one subject?
Don't you see, my subject has no limit. Because in the suffering of the Jews, I want people to understand all suffering. In the injustices committed against them, I want men and women to see all injustice. Leo, when people see my pictures and see the story of the Jewish past, I want them to know that if there is greatness in any people, that greatness will survive despite all persecution.
You don't talk like an artist. You talk like a crusader.
Perhaps I am one in a small way. I never said art is my aim. Art is my means.
But you are an artist, Arthur, and it's 1912. You're working with the best moderns in Paris. Take advantage of them. Don't bury yourself in the Middle Ages. No one paints like that today.
Someone does. I do.
Away from Paris, then, to Persia, to Turkey, to Palestine, to study the way the Middle East made its art, used color, detail, design. As he traveled, he absorbed what he found. But this was no time in history for a quiet study of an old art. The first of two great wars came, and even after the collapse on the Eastern Front, there was another fight to join. A fight for the independence of Poland. After Polish independence was won, the artist could return to his work, to a studio in Paris, and paint his miniatures with the technique he had perfected. But this was the Paris of Picasso and Matisse, a new era of artists and painters where the fine detailed work, the pictorial genius of the miniaturist, the scrolled letters and lavish borders of the illuminator won no recognition. Or so the artist thought and told his wife.
Julia.
Yes, Arthur.
Would it make you very sad if we went back to Poland?
But, Arthur, what about your years of work? Your portfolios of miniatures that no one's ever seen here in Paris?
I can't change, Julia, and I can't seem to reach anyone with what I've done. I wanted to reach many people. So many. I never wanted my work to hang in museums for just a few to look at. I made my art something clear-cut, simple, full of narrative that everyone could understand. It's not vanity, Julia, not a desire for fame, but there's so much I wanted to say to the people. This is the only way I know how.
You've said so much already.
To whom? To you? To our friends? To myself? Look at these paintings in this room. Piles of them lying ready and waiting.
Oh, come in.
A letter came for you, Arthur. I thought it might be important, so I brought it right up.
Thank you, Leo. I've almost given up expecting important letters. Wait a minute. This is from Decour.
Yeah. The Decour galleries. Open it quickly, Arthur.
Julia.
Yes?
Julia. They want to put on an exhibition of my work.
And one of the most famous galleries in Paris. Oh, Arthur, isn't it lucky all your pictures are ready and waiting?
After the exhibition at the Decour Galleries, Arthur Schick was able to talk to the people through his paintings. And as he talked to the people talked about him.
Let's see the exhibit at the Decour Galleries. They say it makes the Bible come to life. Why, there's been no exquisite craftsmanship like this since the Middle Ages. Arthur Schick is a one-man renaissance.
As his fame spread through Paris, people waited for the publication of his first great work, an illumination of the Book of Esther. The French government encouraged the artist, became his patron, conferred on him the palms, the coveted award of the Ministry of Art. Now, at last, he was able to speak for his people. He spoke with a pictorial illumination of the ancient Polish Statute of Kalisz and created one of his greatest works. But when Paris heard he was commemorating this ancient and almost forgotten statute, many people wondered.
But why the Statute of Kalisz, Arthur? What meaning does it have today?
It was the only document in Europe ever to confer rights on the Jews, to give them on paper freedom to work, to move, to live. It granted them a fair trial back in the 13th century.
Sounds like a Magna Carta.
That's just what it was for the Jews then. They came from all over Poland to live under its protection and brought with them something in return. Their skills, their arts, their labor, all of which they contributed to the life of Poland. Come to my exhibit when it opens. My pictures will tell you better than I can what the statute means. At least, I hope they will.
When the exhibit opened, thousands of people came to see the Statute of Kalisz as Arthur Schick had represented it. And as they looked, the figures in the miniatures looked down and said,
I am the weaver, weaving cloth for Poland. I am the cobbler, making shoes for Poland. I am the doctor, healing the sick in Poland.
And together, all the figures of the Jewish craftsmen, the scholars, the artists, looked down from the walls of the exhibit, and they said, as Arthur Schick had created them to say,
we Jews are not guests in the countries where we live. We are not transients, outsiders. We bring our talents, our crafts, our energies to be woven into the culture of these countries. Give us the chance, and we will share the good life with you.
There were still a few years after this for the artist to paint where his fancy took him, and still it took him to the Bible and to the liberators, studies of Simon Bolivar and George Washington. But time was running out now for the artist, because the fighting man was to be called up again. In 1933, the newspapers ran shocked headlines.
Adolf Hitler orders the burning of books by Jewish authors.
As this news became known around the world, Schick's brush began to create the artist's greatest and most treasured book.
I'm designing a Haggadah, the book which proves to the world that the Jews have suffered before, but that despite tyranny, despite oppression, they made their way to the promised land. It has happened before, and it will happen again. This will be my answer to Hitler.
His wife watched him as he worked, and she knew how much of the man had gone into the creation of the book.
He wrote every one of the Hebrew letters of the text by hand, creating each one as a work of art. I watched him struggle until a face no larger than a thumbnail could convey just the right emotion. He chose the paper. He worked with the printers. I know, because I saw how this book came into being, that it was a piece of his life.
Arthur Schick saw the first limited edition of this Haggadah come off the presses at a time when his people were being exterminated in Germany, at a time when the Jews of the world were looking to England to open the doors of Palestine to them, but the doors remained shut. So the artist presented to the King and Queen of Britain the first copy, the dedication for them and the world to read.
At the feet of your most gracious majesties, I humbly lay these works of my hands, showing forth the afflictions of my people, Israel.
The afflictions of his people, Israel, continued until that day in September 1939 when the whole world was plunged into war. When war came to Europe, the artist laid aside his miniatures for the duration and volunteered again for an active part in the fight.
Do you expect me to paint landscapes or flowers while the world is in flames? We artists must abandon our work and fight, not with bullets and bombs, but with the only powerful weapon we have, propaganda.
As the war gained momentum, a stream of cartoons of the Nazis drawn with hate, loathing, revulsion came from the Schick studio. All England, where he lived now, grew to know the deadly, corrosive caricatures of Hitler, Goering, Goebbels, Mussolini, Franco. And as the Nazi terrorism increased, as his hope died for the safety of his family in Poland, the fury which drove the artist intensified. In 1940, Arthur Schick came to America with his family, and we too learned to see the enemy through his eyes. Often, his friends looked at his cartoons and shuddered. Then they looked at the mild gentleman who painted with such violence, and they were confused.
You know, Julia, the more I see of your husband, the more he puzzles me.
Why, Mary?
Because he's two people. He's a round little man with a quick smile. He's gentle, he's affectionate, he's friendly. He's a wonderful husband and father.
Then what's the puzzle?
It's just that the other side of him is so violent. Every time I see his work, I wonder how a man who seems so gentle can feel such hatred.
Don't you understand, Mary, that he's violent because he's gentle? That's why he feels such hatred against the people who are taking all the gentleness and the peace and compassion away from the world.
But it's violence just the same, and there's so much in the world.
Arthur's isn't a blind hatred. I believe you can call it a just one, a righteous indignation. His cartoons are shocking because they have to be, to shake people out of their apathy. Believe me, Mary, violence is a foreign language to Arthur, but he's been forced to learn it.
So in the war years that came to America, the faces of the enemy, as Schick portrayed them, became familiar ones in homes across the country, in posters, in advertisements, in magazines.
Get me a copy of this week's Collier's, will you, Meg? That man, Schick, or Schick, however you pronounce it, did the cover, and it's terrific. Hey, Meg, look at this cartoon in Esquire. It's called The Master Race. Master Race? I don't know where this man, Schick, keeps dreaming these things up.
Soon there was no longer any need to show the enemy to the people because the enemy was conquered. Soon there was peace, a hopeful peace, a not yet troubled peace. The artist now had time for some of the work he loved, to decorate the Book of Job, the Book of Ruth. He brought out his war cartoons and called them Ink and Blood. The fanciful illustrations of Anderson's fairy tales he dedicated to his first American grandchild, the generation of the future. The pictures he created for Pathways Through the Bible, he dedicated to a generation of the past. Not a distant past, but one always close to him.
In March 1943, my beloved 70-year-old mother, Eugenia Sik, was taken from the ghetto of Lodz to the Nazi furnaces of Majdanek. With her, voluntarily, went her faithful servant, the good Christian Josefa, a Polish peasant. Together, hand in hand, they were burned alive. In memory of the two noble martyrs, I dedicate my pictures of the Bible as an eternal Kaddish for these great souls.
As he remembered the tragedy of the recent past and looked across the Atlantic to the tragedy of the present, he made another dedication. A dedication of his energies to the cause of Jewish Palestine. His friends thought too much of his energy was going into the struggle.
Arthur, you're doing too much. Every time I pick up an appeal for Palestine, I see your work.
Arthur always says yes. It's a bad habit, Mary.
But there's a limit, Arthur, to the work you can do.
The Jews in Europe think there should be a limit to their suffering, too. But there isn't.
I know, but there will be. We all can see now that Palestine will be open soon. It has to be.
But when? I know I'm under fire for crying for action. Now, this minute. I know I'm becoming unpopular in the circles that say, wait, negotiate, temporize.
Well, maybe they're right. You're all working for the same goal.
Our time sense differs, that's all. I'm impatient to see justice done.
But Mary's right, Arthur. You can't fight forever. You'll have to rest sometime.
Julia, there's an empty space over there on the wall. It's reserved for an illumination of the Declaration of Independence of Jewish Palestine. When I'm able to design that, then I'll rest.
On the 14th day of May in the year 1948, the new State of Israel was created. Arthur Schick was able to finish the illumination he dreamed of designing. The Declaration of Independence of the United States followed, and the two key documents of the two countries the artist loved best were hung together in the house in New Canaan. In the summer of 1950, he could write in words what he had said so often in color.
Israel is the insurance policy of the Jewish people all over the world. You pay the premium without any hesitation, for it means the assured future for your posterity. I firmly believe that out of Israel, like in ancient time, will come the light of peace. Peace not only among nations, but peace among classes. For peace among classes is the cornerstone of happiness.
There was a little time left now. Time for a less active, more contemplative art. It was while he was working over the new edition of the Book of Esther, the work with which he had begun his career, that a friend of his, a rabbi, spoke to him.
Arthur, you're probably the greatest artist of Jewish subjects in the world today. But you've always worked in books, on paper. Have you ever considered using your talents where they belong best?
Where do they belong best?
In the synagogue itself.
In the synagogue? Yes, I've thought of it, but there never seemed time. I seem to feel myself called out into the world too often.
But what do you feel now?
I feel as if you're right, Rabbi. As if my work does belong in the synagogue. After all, it really came from there.
And in the last years, the faith which had inspired the artist became his principal preoccupation. In his studio, works of art were created for the adornment of the house of his religion. Two candelabra came into being, an ark to hold the Torah, the treasured scrolls, an eternal light, designs for stained glass windows. But there was not enough time left. The struggle for freedom, for justice, for understanding that dated from childhood had taken too many years. Arthur Schick left his studio and retired from the struggle, his work unfinished, last September 13th. His family and friends remember a warm, friendly, humorous man whom they loved. But they remember, too, the fighting man who said,
"As an artist, I believe that my pen and brush must take that place in the thick of the fight."
They will not forget the artist whose book plates read,
"If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget its cunning."
They will often think of the man who said at the end of the Book of Esther, the opening and closing of his career,
"Lord of the universe, God of my forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, to you and your greater glory, whose name is never once mentioned in this solemn book of the triumph of justice, I humbly dedicate this labor of my heart and hands in eternal gratitude."
If you'd like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York, 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Sidney Hollander, prominent philanthropic leader and close friend of Arthur Schick. Mr. Hollander.
His was the talent of the Middle Ages, made more glamorous by his incomparable illuminations of the Haggadah. His was the talent of the sun, reflected through a drop of water. For he captured the resultant rainbow and worked his colors into subjects of great mental scope, then reduced them through the magic of the miniature artist. A square mile and a square inch, yet beautiful to behold. His was the unspoiled soul of the artist that saw life in all its jigsaw levels, and he tried to straighten the path for the world he loved. His was the mind of a statesman that gauged through the artist's trained eye, plus a life and a world of experience, the things that prompted his fighting cartoons for corrective influences. He was the pure, proud, personal friend of man, whose sole purpose was to build an audience for his artistic expressions of heart and mind. And he raised his voice and he used his brush for a better world. I was his friend, and in all humility give testimony here that the privilege of that friendship makes his memory forever a prized possession. Arthur Schick was and is of the great. Mentally and spiritually, he served his people and the world. He left a heritage in his work that is yours to enjoy. To his friends, and they were legion, he left an indelible stamp of man's love of man. He dedicated his mind, his time, yes, his life, to sow seeds of brotherhood wherever he walked. And his voice and his talents were oft heard round the world in the prayer for peace and world brotherhood. He surely held high the eternal light. His work and influence will never grow dim.
Thank you, Mr. Hollander. Our Eternal Light drama today, Portrait of the Artist as a Fighting Man, was written by Helen Candel Hyman. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Catons. Cantor Robert Singel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Peter Capel as Arthur Schick and Alexander Scorby as the narrator. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.